Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoyed the program. Hi there, good to have you with us. On Sunday nights around Australia, through Radio Australia, and via the web to the world. Well, amidst the flurry of demonstrations in Canberra this past week, has been one that perhaps slips under the radar. Australia's major churches met in Canberra to launch a campaign for urgent action on gaming reform, particularly with regard to the pokies. Their actions come in the wake of the gaming industry's announced intention to put major funding behind a campaign they wish to run to get the Gillard government to abandon its commitment to the anti-pokie independent Andrew Wilkie for controls on gaming machines. Now, this is the sort of public stoush that we've not seen in Australia for some years. It crosses established political, social and religious boundaries, uniting and dividing those on the socialist left and the religious right. It's said that whilst the Prime Minister has the support of key members of the ministry, there is a degree of disquiet about effectively making the government hostage to the demands of one independent. Whilst the Liberals and Nationals have declared they will support the gaming industry lobby, there are significant conservative Christian elements in their support base who would be more than pleased to see controls on gaming machines. And even among Christian conservatives, there's no unanimity. A significant absence from the group of major churches and agencies at this week's launch was the Catholic Church. Inhibited perhaps as much by income from certain clubs as by the traditional Irish love of the punt. Well, tonight we've invited members of the churches who are participating in the campaign to explain their position. And a little later there'll also be the opportunity for representatives of the gaming lobby to put their point of view. So to find the reasons why, we've invited representatives of the church groups who've launched a campaign to hold the government to their promises, and later we'll also hear from the clubs and gaming industry about why they wish to sink so much into a campaign to get the government to change its mind. First up, it's welcome to Lynn Hadfield-Dodds, the National Director of Uniting Care, together with her colleague Mark Henley of Wesley Uniting Care in Adelaide. Also, we have the Reverend Tim Costello, often a visitor to this program, CEO of World Vision. Tim has a long history on this issue, going back to his days with the Baptist Church and as a local minister in St Kilda in Melbourne. And our Melbourne studios, it's also a pleasure to welcome Dr Charles Livingston, Deputy Head of the Department of Health and Social Science at Monash University. A little later, we'll also be joined by Anthony Ball of Clubs Australia. Welcome to you all.
Good evening.
Thanks, John.
Good evening, John.
First, Tim Costello, is this just old-fashioned wowserism, that is a narrowly confined moral issue that really should be left behind in a pluralist society?
No, absolutely not. Old-fashioned wowserism would be prohibitionist, and I don't think you'll find any of those of us who are taking on this fight saying there should be total prohibition. We accept it's a legal adult entertainment. It's very simple. It's saying this is a dangerous consumer product. When you can risk $15,000 an hour playing the pokies, as the Productivity Commission found, and lose many, many thousands of dollars an hour, then this is simply unacceptable. In fact, the Justice Department here in Victoria found that after heroin, the second greatest contributor to crime was pokies. It affects all of us. So it's really saying make this product safe, or make it safer, not safe. It won't be totally safe. And in Britain, where there's some pokies in clubs and pubs, you can lose about $30 to $50 an hour maximum. You wouldn't then need a pre-commitment card, a mandatory pre-commitment card. We could say, well, that's a lot safer. But when you can risk $15,000 and lose thousands of dollars an hour, this is just about greed. This is about scapegoating problem gamblers. It's not about clubs and being anti them or anti problem gamblers. It's about a product that's unsafe.
We'll get into the issues and how the campaign of the churches is going to unfold a little later. But let's continue with the the statistics that have brought this issue to the fore. Charles Livingstone, as somebody who's involved from an academic point of view, as a Deputy Director of the Department of Health and Social Science at Monash University, what's led you to have concern with this issue at more than just an academic level?
Well, this is both a public health and an ethical issue, I think. I come to it as someone who's interested in improving the health and well-being of the public, and this is an area of great concern to anyone who is interested in just that topic, the health and well-being of the population. It's also an ethical issue. It's an ethical issue in the same way that tobacco consumption or excessive alcohol consumption is an ethical issue. What we have is an industry which unfortunately markets quite a dangerous product without proper and appropriate constraints, and which causes extreme harm to those who, using it and entirely as it's intended to be used, suffer very substantial consequences from it, both for themselves, for their families, for their employers, and for the broader community. So from my perspective, it's a public health and an ethical issue, and it's something about which we can act. There are many things that we can't fix. We can't cure cancers, for example. But this is an area of public health concern and ethical concern where we can actually fix it, almost with the stroke of the regulator's pen.
It has wider ramifications than just the damage to the individual. Is this a concern for you in the Department of Public Health? And here I'm referring to the impact of the amount of money coming out of gaming machines and its impact on social policy through the way in which it's said state treasuries have come to be dependent on a certain stream of money coming through this avenue.
Well, in New South Wales and Victoria, the state treasuries make about $1 billion a year each out of poker machine revenue. They make another $500 to $600 million out of other gambling forms. Across Australia, poker machines contribute about $4 billion or more of the $5.5 to $6 billion that the state treasuries get out of gambling revenue. So it's a not insignificant contributor. In Victoria, it's around 12% of the state's own tax revenue, so it's a fairly hefty proportion of what they get. The problem is that of that revenue, the Productivity Commission estimated around 40% comes from out of the pockets of people with a serious gambling problem, and another 20% from the pockets of people who have a moderate to severe gambling problem. So overall, about 60% of the money that is lost playing pokies in Australia comes from people who have a problem with their gambling to some degree. Now, that's a very significant proportion of it, and I think all you have to do is look at that to see that what we are confronted with is a very serious ethical and public health problem. But the other problem, of course, is that for every person who is themselves caught up in a gambling problem, the Commission, again, the Productivity Commission, again, estimates that there are between 5 and 10, averaging around 7 other individuals who are adversely affected. And that obviously is family members, children, but also employers and the broader public. I think Tim mentioned earlier that a study undertaken on behalf of the Department of Justice in Victoria last year reported that after heroin-related crime, the largest single indicator of crime rates in any particular local area was the number of poker machines available in that area. So, this is something which affects not just the individual and their families and perhaps their employers and others they know, but the broader community in a very severe and direct way.
Lynn Hadfield-Dodds, you're the National Director of Uniting Care, the major social welfare and issues agency for the Uniting Church in Australia. You've been a significant contributor to the development of this campaign by the churches. Why have the churches decided to get into this issue, and why now?
Oh, I don't think it's a question of why now, John. The churches have been very concerned about this issue for decades, if not hundreds of years, and certainly since settlement in Australia. So Tim would be a classic example of a high-profile church leader who's been very, very active in this area. My church, the Uniting Church, has got a long history of being very concerned about the impacts of problem gambling. the reason that the major Australian churches have come together right now at this point in Australia's political history is there's an opportunity now with the agreement that Andrew Wilkie has secured with the Gillard Labor government to try to get a change. You know, as Charles says, we're one stroke of a regulator's pen away from making gambling much safer for a huge amount of people. And so the churches are coming together. We've been successful working together at the state level in Victoria, in South Australia and in Tasmania to get some gains, and we'd like to see some gains in terms of safer gambling at the national level.
But why now? I take it the reason now is that it's not sufficient for you to trust the government that they will deliver on Andrew Wilkie, on the promise to Andrew Wilkie to introduce some form of tighter regulation on gaming, and we'll get to the nature of that in a moment. But you're responding, I would take it, directly to the gaming industry's challenge that it will do its best to get the Gillard government to abandon this commitment.
Indeed. I mean, you know, while it's that joke, trust me on the government, I think in this case the government is fair dinkum about this issue. I've had several conversations with Jenny Macklin. She came to the Australian Churches Forum on this issue, and she's given every indication that she is fair dinkum and personally committed, you know, to seeing the change go through. But I think it's really important in the public space that we have a robust dialogue over the next year as the changes are starting to get pushed through, and the owners of these businesses have made it very clear that they are going to be investing tens of millions of dollars into a campaign to say that poker machines, as they're currently configured and as they're currently regulated, are perfectly safe. We don't believe that, and so we intend to be a persistent and noisy alternative voice in the public space.
Tim Costello, not all churches have ridden to the rescue on this issue. I noticed the Catholic Church chose quite publicly to sort of abstain from dipping its toe into this one.
Yeah, look, I think the history of this is varied. So Cardinal Pell, when he was Archbishop here in Melbourne, launched many of the Victorian Church's gambling task force reports. He made the point that in Catholic teaching, gambling is not a sin, but he and the Church were very worried about the damage that it was causing, and they were an active and still an active participant at the state level. At the national level, in terms of this particular grouping together, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Catholic Church came on board. At the moment, I don't necessarily understand why they haven't. I do know, talking to a number of high-profile Catholic leaders, they say, of course, there's a bit of an issue with our Catholic clubs, and it's a bit embarrassing, but we're with you. They have made it very clear to me personally that they think gambling pokies are out of control. So I don't think I'd read too much into them not formally being a foundation member of what we launched last week.
Mark Henley, let me bring you into this discussion. You're one of those people who's going to be concerned with unrolling this campaign on the ground. Give us the details. What particularly are you asking for, asking the government to commit itself to? And let's explain it a little bit. The request by Andrew Wilkie, the commitment he's asked from the Gillard government, is that they'll commit themselves to mandatory pre-commitment or some form of mandatory pre-commitment. Now, just what does this mean? Explain what is being asked for here.
Certainly what we're looking for is, as Tim and others have already said, is to make gambling safer. And we need to perhaps very quickly understand a bit of the history here, is that poker machine gambling is still a relatively new industry and a relatively new addiction for much of Australia. While every state has gone in different directions, and this is really the first time that gambling has come at national level as an issue in Australia. It's very much been a state issue up to now, but now it's become a national issue. And each state's got a bit of a different history. But the reality is we're needing to recognise that poker machine gambling is doing something like 80 to 85% of the harm from gambling. When poker machines were introduced into South Australia, Victoria in the early 90s, problem gambling went up by about tenfold. So that's why the focus for now is on poker machines, although we certainly will be wanting to bring in other forms of gambling into the pre-commitment. What we recognise in terms of making a product safer is that there's a, I think, a well-proven experience in retail and banking and a whole lot of areas that if people set a spending limit to any activity before they undertake that activity, they're much more likely to stick to that spending limit. You know, if I'm going to go out to a restaurant and I just say, right, well, yeah, next Saturday night, it's my wife's birthday, I'll take her out and, you know, I'll put aside $150 or whatever so that we have a good night. And that's about what I'll spend. So what we're saying is that gambling is no different. Customers should have the opportunity to set a limit, to set a budget on the amount of money they want to gamble prior to them going and conducting a gambling session. Of course, the way pokies work is it's very hard to know actually how much you're spending. You know, if I go to the movies or the footy or just about any other form of recreation, I actually know how much I'm spending. You know, I'm going to spend $15 to watch a movie that'll go for, I don't know, 110 minutes or whatever. I know how much I'm spending. But if I walk into a poker machine venue, I'm just putting money in, if it's notes or coins or whatever, and I really don't know how much this activity is costing me. So what we're wanting is pre-commitment, or, you know, the language we are really saying is it's really simply about helping people to budget to gamble. And we're saying there's, I mean, the Productivity Commission talks about five elements, but there's probably three key elements. The first one is that every poker machine in Australia needs to be able to read some sort of device that enables pre-commitment. And look, we're not hung up on whether it's a card, a tag, a USB, whatever. But let's, for the sake of the argument, talk about a card with that can hold some data on it. We're then saying that every person that's going to gamble needs to have a card to be able to activate the machine, and in that, with that card, they can set a limit. And we're saying that to increase their limit, they need to give 24 hours notice, at least, to change that limit, to just help people to be able to stick to the limits. Perhaps one of the areas, the third area of involvement with our pre-commitment scheme, is really what happens when people reach their limits. And there's a bit of debate about this, and that's probably one that's still very much alive. I mean, at one end, Victoria was talking about the machine closing down. So you reach the limit, machine shuts down. Some existing venues, look, you get a beep or a message or a text message on your mobile phone, or maybe somebody from the venue comes and sees what you're up to. So there's a number of interventions that can occur once a limit's reached. The critical thing, though, to summarise here, John, is that we need every poker machine and every poker machine venue enabled to be able to operate a budget to gamble program, and every poker machine player needs to have some sort of device that is unique to them that enables them to preset their gambling spend limit.
Charles Livingston, this question of mandatory pre-commitment versus some form of voluntary pre-commitment it seems to be up for discussion as well. Is there an issue here?
Absolutely. The evidence suggests that a voluntary pre-commitment scheme is unlikely to be effective, because if people can simply not use it, then they won't use it. It's a bit like saying you can have voluntary seat belts. You can, you know, we're going to fit them in every car, but you can decide for yourself whether you want to use it. Now, some people will use it. There's no question of that. But the people you most want to use it are least likely to. So a mandatory scheme, and certainly this is what the evidence from Nova Scotia in Canada, where they've been trialling a system like this now across all of their machines for the last couple of years, and from the trials in South Australia and Queensland, suggests that a voluntary scheme, although it offers some benefits to a small number of people, is much less likely to be taken up and be as effective as a mandatory scheme. A mandatory scheme, to be effective, almost certainly needs to be universal. In other words, every machine needs to have it on its capacity, and it needs to be a system which can be recognised at least across a jurisdiction. So if you've got a card issued in Victoria, then it should work on every machine in Victoria, and the limit that you set should be binding across it. So if you had set yourself, for example, a limit of $100 a day, regardless of how many venues you visit in the course of that day, once you hit $100, then the consequences of hitting the boundary will flow. Now, I happen to think that the best consequence should be that you should stop play for that time, and you can set a limit of time as well as money. So, for example, you might set yourself a limit of 3 hours a day or $100 a day, maybe $500 a week, whatever you wish to do. Obviously, some people would set higher limits. People who are in the throes of gambling problems might set higher limits than is wise for them. However, many people, even those in the throes of a serious gambling problem, have lucid moments when they realise what they're doing and they try to struggle with the problem that they've got. And so for those people, pre-commitment provides an extraordinarily powerful tool which is simply not available to them at the moment. It also, for the first time, would enable people who wish to self-exclude from venues, from poker machine play, and there are many of them, to have an effective way of doing that. At the moment, self-exclusion relies essentially on large numbers of photographs of people stuck behind the walls of the bars in hotels, and it's about as effective as you would imagine it to be when there's 300 or 400 passport-sized photographs of someone stuck behind the bar of a hotel. So self-exclusion would certainly be considerably enhanced by this scheme. But for ordinary people, for people who sometimes lose control of their gambling, people who are on the pathway perhaps to developing a gambling problem and who want to control it, this provides an invaluable tool, a real device which enables them to actually set a limit, stick to that limit, realise how much they're playing, and indeed to get an account of what they've been playing and to sort of get a reality check that way. Now, none of these things are currently available. And it has to be remembered that in Australia we have very high impact poker machines at a very large number of social venues. This is almost unprecedented. It's unique in the world. There are very few jurisdictions in the world, apart from a few American states, where you can have such high impact poker machines at almost every social venue. And when I say high impact, in New South Wales you can bet $10 a spin. You can spin the thing every 2.5 seconds. You can put $10,000 at once into any poker machine in New South Wales, and you have high volatility, which means that the machines pay out very high prizes. In Britain, as I think Tim Costello pointed out before, they have gone down this path, but in a very careful way, and you can have 2 or 3 low-impact machines in local clubs or pubs. These are machines where you can have typically a maximum bet of 50p and a maximum prize of £100. So the rate of potential loss is vastly diminished from what you've got in almost every venue in Australia. So we're talking about very high impact machines, very high risk machines in Australia, which are almost completely unconstrained. You can walk in off the street, put $10,000 into a poker machine in Australia and in Sydney and play it off until all that money's gone.
So you're suggesting you could introduce some sort of grading on machines? That is, introduce some sort of restriction on the amount you can pay, you can invest on high impact machines?
The Productivity Commission basically suggested 2 pathways. One was pre-commitment, as has been discussed, and Mark's outlined that quite well. The other pathway is to reduce the parameter settings, as they call them, on machines. So, for example, if you wanted to, one way of doing it would be to have a model in which you have low-impact machines that are open access. In other words, you can walk in off the street and you can bet on a machine where you might have a maximum bet of 50 cents a spin and a maximum price perhaps of $500. Now, my calculation suggests that on a machine like that, the average rate of loss would be around about $55 an hour. Now, that's still a not insignificant sum of money for many people, but it is vastly less than the $1,500 an hour, which is the average rate of loss on a high-impact machine in New South Wales now. You would also restrict the amount of money you could put into it. So, for example, instead of being able to put $10,000 into one as you can in New South Wales now, you could put in a mere $20 at a time. So $20 is still a sum of money for many people. $55 an hour is still a significant sum of money. But instead of being able to go through your weekly pay packet in 20 minutes, which is currently the case in New South Wales and Victoria, it would take you several hours to do that. Now, the likelihood of someone sitting there for several hours while they do it is much diminished. So the harmful impact of such a device would be greatly lessened. So you could go down that path, or you could come up with some combination of them. What I would like to see would be some thought on to high-impact machines being available, but only with pre-commitment. That is, you have to have a card, you have to be registered, you have to have limits, you have to get a record of what you've spent. If you want to play ambient machines, that is, low-impact machines, you know, the irregular recreational punter who goes once a month to meet their friends, pensioners who might like to drop into the club and have a cheap meal and meet their friends and so on and put $10 into the machine, well, these low-impact machines would be quite acceptable for them. They probably wouldn't even notice the difference. But the risk of them endangering large sums of money would be greatly diminished.
Tim Costello, shifting to the politics of this, have you noticed any pressure being exerted as yet by the gaming industry on the church's lobby?
We're constantly doing battle, so it's pressure mainly over the airwaves. The gaming industry try and say, look, they're trying to destroy clubs. It's interesting that it's the clubs running this campaign, not pubs. It's identical interests, and yet clubs are more socially acceptable hubs. They're putting their foot forward, which would be a thing to ask Anthony about, but it's exactly the same.
Well, I've heard scuttlebutt because I've promoted this program. You get a few phone calls, and I've had people ringing to me and saying, oh, look, you know, our charity's already been told, look, if we support this, you know, that they won't give us as much money as they used to.
Yeah. So let me be very clear. Australia was able to fund charity and community groups easily and capably and competently before we had pokies. We only got them in 1992 in Victoria. We still had plenty of dollars for charity. This notion now of the drip feed, that you get some dollars from pokies to your community group and you cannot function without it, is a council of despair. It's just nonsense. So, yes, there is certainly pressure on little charities to step up, to be, if you like, the laundering bodies for the industry. And it's a very simple argument. I'm not against clubs. I think clubs are fantastic, where people meet and drink and have, you know, belonging and recreation. This is just about a dangerous product. Just as Charles was saying, a motor car is a dangerous product. We need them. But we said, you're not going to have a voluntary seatbelt policy. It's going to be compulsory. Sure, this is a dangerous product which will always hurt some people, but we are going to make it safer with either mandatory commitments on the high-intensity, high-impact machines or, as Charles very sensibly said and Britain has done, if you don't want a card, you play the low-impact machines, which is essentially buying distraction time, buying a bit of recreation time. Now, who's risking $10,000 an hour for just a bit of distraction and recreation? That, you know, this is a complete nonsense. And the clubs and pubs' whole business model is structured around people who have a problem. That they're the ones with, as the Productivity Commission said, 40 cents in every dollar coming from a person who effectively has no free will. They're addicted. Another 20 cents, so 60% when people have a problem, a business model structured around them is simply wrong. As I constantly say, you know, if the alcohol industry lived off alcoholics to the tune of 40 to 60% of their profits, there would be social uproar. This is just unacceptable, and this is why we formed a national body and supporting both Julia Gillard and Andrew Wilkie.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. We're talking about pokies. Are they a challenge to each and every one of us? Do they need to be regulated? The churches have launched a lobbying campaign in the wake of the announcement by the gaming industry that they will also be involved in a lobbying campaign aimed at overturning government intentions to introduce restrictions on the way pokies are accessed in clubs and pubs around Australia. If you'd like to join the conversation, do give us a call, 1300 800 222. Right now, we're going to be joined by Anthony Ball, and Anthony is the CEO of Clubs Australia. Anthony, it's good to have you with us. Thanks so much for being available. Anthony, you've heard what those who feel there do need to be restrictions placed on access to gaming machines have had to say. How do you respond, and why are you particularly aiming to overturn Andrew Wilkie's desire to have some form of pre-commitment introduced on machines?
Yeah, look, this is a debate that's been going on, I guess, in earnest now for probably 10 years. And the most recent development is this agreement between Andrew Wilkie and Julia Gillard as Prime Minister to introduce called full pre-commitment national system. And I didn't hear everything that was talked about before, but I guess you've gone through it. We're characterising it as we would call it, you know, effectively a licence for everybody who wants to play a poker machine. The reality is that whatever the system, and it's yet to be properly worked out, you would have to register, you'd have to go on a database, you would have to set binding limits. Effectively, your play is tracked, and you know, we're making the point that that we think that that's heavy-handed and intrusive. And look, we can go back and forth about the percentage of our revenue that comes from problem gamblers and we hotly contest the 40 or 60 or some other marks that have been set out there. But this debate is really about how to best help people with a problem. And so you have this proposal to introduce at huge expense and at huge inconvenience to your average punter who doesn't have a problem, this system that hasn't been built yet, hasn't even been designed, but we know would basically require significant change to 200,000 poker machines. Now, we're saying that's there's a better way of doing it. Now, look, as far as the comparison with the UK goes, I mean, they're called fruit machines. They're not gambling devices. And so some of the proposals is that we introduce this kind of fruit machine and have some complicated system whereby if you want to play something, of so-called higher intensity, there needs to be a different technology. It's actually an unreal debate for, say, the Narrabri Golf Club, which has 12 poker machines, has done for 60 years. They're looking at this saying, what is all this about? I've got a pretty good feel for my members. I know who they are. They've been members here for a long time. We can see if they're in trouble. We try and help them. That's the nature of what that club does. And they're a little bit... unsure about what's coming next. So look, we're out there. We're out there saying, look, in principle, we don't think that there should be a system of technology that applies to all gamblers. We think that there very definitely is a case for introducing a scheme that is voluntary, and that is a big commitment as well. And we think that with education and communication, that can be a tool that helps people who want to set and stick to limits using technology, but also a range of other things can be introduced that we've agreed to when the government first responded to the Productivity Commission report a few months ago. We said, well, look, these are all good ideas. Let's work on them collectively. And I thought that had good prospects of success, but unfortunately we were blindsided somewhat by the hung parliament and things that came after that. So. I think this really is a debate about what is a cost-effective way of helping problem gamblers, and I think that's sometimes lost.
Charles Livingston, your response to what Anthony has just stated about the cost implications and the nature of the machine being the nature of the controls being pervasive and intrusive.
Well, they're not intrusive at all. I mean, this is a product which the price of which you do not know in advance. I mean, how many consumer products are there where when you walk in and start using it, you don't know what it's going to cost you? For example, if you walk in with $30 to put into a poker machine, that might last you 10 minutes, it might last you 3 minutes, it might last you half an hour. And the problem we've got is that people don't only chase money, they chase time on the machine. And, I mean, it has to be remembered too that these are machines which are not just simple, amusement devices. These are machines which have, for example, Aristocrat, one of Australia's leading manufacturers of poker machines, spends $120 million a year on research and development to make its machines as effective as possible. And their design goals are to maximise the time on device and the revenue per available customer. That's what they set out to do. And they're extremely good at it. I mean, these are devices which use operant and classical conditioning principles, well-established psychological principles, to make the thing as attractive as possible to people. And unfortunately, a very significant proportion of the people who play them regularly, 30% of the people who play them regularly, have some degree of gambling problem. It also has to be remembered that only about 600,000 people in Australia play gaming machines regularly. Only about between 25 and 30% of the population overall play them at all. And about 600,000 people play them regularly, that is every week or more often than that. So what we're talking about is a relatively small proportion of the population who use these devices, but a very large proportion of the population who actually use them, who get into trouble with them. I think, as Tim said earlier, if you had this sort of pattern of use and harm in any other product, there would be public outcry. And I think, the reality is that this is a dangerous product and it should be treated as one. Now, for Anthony to suggest that, this is a debate about how to treat problem gamblers is also slightly misleading because, there is a spectrum. There is a spectrum, if you like, a continuum from the person who plays a pokie once a year and has no harm to the person who plays it every day and has considerable harm. And every person who experiences considerable harm from a pokie was once someone who didn't experience harm from a pokie. So people move in and out of harm. They move along this continuum all the time. And even people who don't normally experience harm from pokies can intermittently experience it because they have absolutely no capacity to control their expenditure. And the machine itself, it is designed to make it as attractive as possible and as hard as possible for someone to stop playing it. So, you know, for Anthony to suggest that this is just to be a focus on problem gamblers is very misleading. It's a focus on anyone who uses a poker machine and would like to get more control over their expenditure. And I suspect that that is the vast majority of regular players and many irregular players. So, you know, it is certainly about problem gambling, but it is also about people who are on the slippery slope towards problem gambling and people who are intermittently experiencing difficulties, excessive expenditure with their gambling.
Anthony, how do you respond to that?
Oh, look, the numbers are flying, aren't they? I mean, look, 5 million people play a poker machine each year. 95,000 of those are classified as problem gamblers. Now, if ever there was a statistic that suggested that it's that poker machines aren't inherently addictive, I think you've got it there. But the again, the point is that it hasn't been explained to anyone how this license to gamble is going to help a problem gambler. I mean, somebody explain that to me. As Charles said, a problem gambler does not exercise, you know, common sense or hasn't got the ability to set a rational limit or a limit that they can stick to. You know, how does this help them? In fact, you know, I'm aware of researchers that are saying that it can actually exacerbate the problem, because what you're saying is that, look, if you've got this card, then you're sweet. It's effectively a green light to go ahead and gamble, and they will. And they'll continue to do it. Well, if you say to somebody all you need to do is to get a card and you can gamble 100 or 200 a day, who says they can afford that for a start, or whether they're a problem gambler or not? I mean, it just hasn't been explained why this is the silver bullet for problem gambling, and plenty of people are saying that it's not.
Mark Henley, a brief response from you to what Anthony has said.
Yeah, I mean, certainly nobody is saying this is a silver bullet. We're saying it's an important and significant step towards making poker machines a safer product. And again, our focus is not on on problem gamblers, although they are an important group. We are about making poker machines safer. And that's the critical issue that we're trying to focus on here. The other thing is this notion of rational limit setting. And I'm a bit disappointed that Anthony's sort of implying, from what I was hearing there, that anybody that has a gambling problem is addicted and irrational at all times. Far from it. In fact, people coming to Uniting Church and other gambling help services are quite loose, quite rational. They know what's going on when they're not in front of a poker machine. They walk into poker machines and, you know, the psychological tricks pick them up and they're hooked and they lose control. So what we're simply saying is, let's make sure that we've got a simple process, you know, a budget to gamble, which enables people to set their gambling limits, their poker machine play limits, when they're away from the venue, so that when they choose to go to a venue, there is a device there that's going to help them stick to their limits. And absolutely, people are able to make clear, lucid and rational decisions about their spending, about what they're doing with their gambling play when they're away from the poker machines. It's when they're in the venues that the problems start. And that's why this this budget to gamble approach is so important. It's important, it's significant, it's not the silver bullet, but it's certainly a very important consumer protection measure.
Anthony Ball, before we let you go, because we've got a lot of calls on the board to take here, to what extent are the clubs and pubs and gaming industry prepared to fight this campaign? People have used figures like a $20 million war chest that's been bandied around. Quite seriously about taking it to a public campaign of that dimension?
Yeah, there are lots of excitement about that number. No, but look, we're certainly... Look, we've been talking about this since the day that we became aware of it, and, you know, call it a campaign, call it whatever you like, we are going to absolutely put the view of clubs forward, and that's to decision makers, you know, opinion leaders, all of that. And, And we will, I guess, it is going to be public, but there's, we believe there's groups of people who need to hear our point of view, and that will include poker machine players themselves. Like I said, 5 million people a year play them. It'll be club workers. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of people who work in our clubs, and there's a bunch of organisations, sporting or otherwise, who for decades have worked closely with their clubs to do what they want to do. And so we'll be out there and we'll be talking to them about what we see being the issues with this licence to gamble. And then that's all a part of a healthy democracy. I know that Tim and others are out there putting the contrary point of view, and we'll have that debate.
What about the suggestions that some of your members may be encouraged to boycott some churches and charities?
Oh, yeah, no, look, I can't see that happening, in truth. I mean, look, if you look at even the Salvation Army, that have had a very long and close association with, you know, for instance, RSL clubs, going back, you know, to the 19 post-Second World War, we will never discourage our clubs from supporting them. I think what happened was that our clubs were absolutely spooked by reading an article in one of the major Sydney papers that said that there was going to be a campaign of sorts, and I think they just pointed it out on the Friday night when the Salvation Army officers came in and collected money from punters and club members. They just wanted to know what that campaign was. But look, clubs will continue to support charities, community groups, sporting organisations for as long as they're around. You can guarantee that.
Anthony Ball, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Good to have you with us. You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. We're talking about the gaming issue, and the church's campaign recently announced to take a stand on the issue and support Andrew Wilkie, Nick Xenophon, and those who are moving to get the Gillard government to live up to its commitment to introduce some form of mandatory pre-commitment on gaming machines. Time to take a few calls from you. Before I do, Lynn Hatfield-Dodds, you've been quietly sitting there for some time. Lynn, just outline to us the nature of the campaign that's going to be waged by the churches on this issue.
Oh, sure. First of all, I'm very impressed with Anthony sounding so very reasonable. I understood it was a little more serious in Sydney than some people in some clubs having a chat to some Salvation people coming in with tins. But let's leave that there. I'm delighted to hear that Clubs Australia will be discouraging their members from discouraging the Salvation Army. That's terrific. Our campaign is... First of all, we set up a task force. That task force will meet during the year. We will be, I think, meeting and really making some very public statements based on the evidence about, you know, the impacts of problem gambling on people's lives. The Productivity Commission has costed it at $4.7 billion. That's another number. But we had a guy called Bob from Port Pirie at our forum this week, and he told his story. His story involves family breakdown. It involves... suicidal impulses, it involves depression, it involves embezzling tens of thousands of dollars, jail time, a breakdown of a community. His is a very standard story, a very distressing story to hear. So we'll be getting the story of Bob and people like him out in the public.
Will you be getting members of local congregations to become active on the issue?
We will. We'll be getting our staff in our agencies. The major churches run about 70% of all community services across the country. So we'll be inviting our staff, people who volunteer in our agencies, members of our congregations, if they wish, to have a say as well. So we hope we can get a real groundswell going about this issue.
Time to take a couple of calls on the issue. Let's talk to Ian in Noosa Head. Hello, Ian. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. What would you like to say?
Good, thank you, and welcome, and hello to the panel. Tim Costello made an interesting point when he pointed out that the greatest opposition to the church's initiatives on this issue is coming from the clubs, not the pubs. Clubs portray themselves, to some extent, as social benefactors, not social destroyers. And therefore, I would suggest that clubs having pokies, what I would call a rotten apple in the barrel, that this is contrary to what clubs are supposed to be doing. If they're going to be a benefit to society, they should get rid of these parasitic machines. I'm outraged by the fact that these clubs with poker machines enjoy tax-exempt status. And I would say to Lynn Hatfield Dodds and the program they're developing that they should be pressing politicians that any club that has a poker machine loses its tax-free status. I'd be interested in Lynn's response on that issue, John.
Lynn.
Oh, look, there's a range of things, Ian, we're going to be pushing for. I guess first and foremost is this idea of mandatory pre-commitment because there's a window of opportunity. But certainly I'm happy to take your idea on board. I mean, as Mark Henley said, the mandatory pre-commitment is not a silver bullet. It's one part of a suite of things we're asking for. So anything that cleans up the environment to help people who are exhibiting addictive behaviours or who will. One of the things we haven't said yet is the mandatory pre-commitment may not be a silver bullet for people who are already in the problem gambling arena, but it sure, I think, has the capacity to stop a whole lot of Australians becoming problem gamblers, and that's really important too.
Let's go to Peter in St Helens. Thanks, Ian, for your call. Peter, hello and welcome. What would you like to say?
Yeah, well, see, everybody's waiting on this New South Wales election and all this sort of thing. I think people are sick of this Labor government and them telling people what to do.
Slightly different subject, Peter. We'll move along because I've got too many calls on the board. It broadens out the issue somewhat. To Mark in Shepparton. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Hi, guys. It's a great show this evening. Good evening to the panel. Now, look, I've had a couple of friends go through this similar issue, and there seems to be a direct correlation to clubs serving alcohol and people sort of not making correct decisions the more they drink. And my suggestion is that maybe in the pokey parts of those venues that they serve light beer and increase the prices of the alcohol and make it less attractive to drink, if you know what I mean, because I believe that the alcohol abuse as well as the being at the pokies making people's decision-making worse. You know what I mean?
Indeed. Peter, that would seem to me to be broadening the scope of the problem in terms of who you're taking on. It's a big issue. Mark Henley, your response, very briefly.
Oh, look, he's absolutely spot on that, in fact, that alcohol plus tobacco plus pokies has been a very potent mix for harm. You know, we've had some success in slowly but surely reducing the tobacco use in gaming venues. But, you know, the responsible service of alcohol has got to run alongside pokies. So, you know, the call is absolutely spot on. We need to be controlling alcohol along with tobacco so that, again, it's about safe products.
We're almost out of time. Tim Costello, is there a time frame here? Has the government committed itself to actually beginning to introduce some legislative move on this issue? And what's the time frame?
Yeah, look, the federal government has said to the states, we need to know by May whether you're going to cooperate. If you wanted to stay a state jurisdiction, and it's far better to have cooperative federalism, then we're going to do this. Come on board. Now, the Baillieu government, the Farrell government have said no. I think the South Australian and Tasmanian government are still thinking about it, and I think Anna Bligh is also. Western Australia doesn't really have pokies, and that's why they have a third of the problem gamblers of the rest of us. Now, it's looking like...
Very quickly, Tim.
That the federal government are going to have to maybe legislate, take over this area from the states if they don't get cooperation.
We shall have to leave it there and watch. To Mark Henley, Charles Livingston, Lynn Hatfield Dodds and Tim Costello and Anthony Ball, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Night. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.